Hello and welcome to the Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 710. Now, I know you're thinking desert, there is no 710 in Super Mario Brothers. Each world stops when the second digit reaches 8. Well, in light of the 3DS uproar and Blue's rant, we're trying to distance ourselves from Nintendo, right?
That'd probably be for the best.
No, I'm kidding. In fact, I even bought a DS game on my shopping trip today, but I'm sure I'll mention that later. Before I do, let me introduce my wonderful co-host. First up, rocking the hawk at 110 pounds, and the red trunks is Sage, Samurage, Morris, Green.
What up, Rock the Hawk?
In the other corner, the blue swimming trunks. Get that? Yeah. Is our very own Eric Blue Swim, no name necessary, no last name necessary.
Actually, this week you can call me Eternal Blue Swim because my 10-plus year saga to finally find Lunar 2 has ended. And in honor of that, I'm changing my name for this week only.
Really?
The Eternal. There you go, the Eternal Blue Swim. Now, how much did you pay? You told me roughly $30, no book?
It was $25.99, and it had the case, but apparently the instruction manual was like one of the hardbound, thicker ones that wouldn't fit in the...
Yeah, that's the one that Working Designs put out, came in the box.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe. I've been wanting those things for ever since I saw them, and I couldn't find the special edition, which it kind of bums me out, but at the same time, I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. It's like, sure. I finally found it.
Can I tell you, I had that once, and I sold it.
You had a gift horse, and you sold it?
Yes. Yes, in the mouth. So anyway, as I mentioned, I did a little bit of game shopping today, which I hadn't done in years. The DS title I just mentioned was Clubhouse Games, which is probably my Desert Island DS pick, for those that haven't played it.
That is an awesome game.
It is. I really enjoyed it. I had it once. I gave it away. It's this collection of, how many, 42? 42 games, things like dominoes, chess, poker, and it's wrapped up in this cool little shell that has you unlocking games, like the actual interface and the system is really cool. Like the games themselves are well done, they all use the touchscreen, but it's the way you unlock and you gain additional games that's really cool. Found it at Sears for $14.99, and so I picked it up again. The other thing, I know this is really thrilling you here, but I strolled over to Best Buy to take part in there, buy one, get one for half off sale. And I grabbed a few titles that I'm sure I know is going to make you jealous, Sage. Actually, Blue 2. Kane and Lynch 2, Dog Days.
Oof.
Yeah. Woof. Yeah. You guys play that at all? Rough.
I never played any of the Kane and Lynch games because of the whole Gertzman Gate thing.
Okay.
There's a Gerstmann Gate. I can never remember his name.
One of those. I played the originals. Okay, nothing great. I played the demo, and I think we played it at Sean played it at E3, and it looked okay. But, you know, $10, whatever. And also Dynasty Warriors Strike Force, which for some reason, I don't know what happened to. I had it for 360. The one thing
I heard mixed reviews about that, though, in general.
It was an interesting take on the Strike Force because it was a lot more difficult than your average Dynasty Warriors. You couldn't just button mash. And I know a lot of people, you know, claim Dynasty Warriors is just this button masher. They made it a lot more difficult.
Dynamic?
I wouldn't say it's dynamic. It's still kind of the same thing. But every battle is not a given anymore. You know, when you encounter three guys, you could very well lose a lot of life, you know, fighting that particular trio.
Wow, a challenge level.
Yeah, there you go. So Best Buy, they wouldn't honor my online price, or they wouldn't honor their own online price for the Resistance 2 pack, which was $10 off this weekend.
Really?
Yeah, but I did find the one thing I wanted to give a shout out was their trade-in values were really exceptional. First, I got bumped up for trading in two games, and then I got an additional bump because I put $5 pre-order towards a game. So overall, their prices kind of beat the hell out of GameStop. So that's what's going on in my fascinating life. What about yours?
Well, this past week or thereabouts, I've been helping some family friends move, including packing stuff up, moving stuff onto the trailer, and cleaning up, like, you know, just trash, getting the place ready to, you know, ready to be rented again. Basically, like, by the time I get back, I'm pretty much wiped.
Okay.
And so I really haven't been able to do too much gaming-wise that isn't, like, on the Android, you know, on my Android phone.
I almost picked one up today. I almost picked up
a device. Droid?
Yeah, I was so close.
I recommend them.
Target had the, oh, God, I forgot the model. One was on sale for $49, and if I traded in my iPhone, they would have given me $65 back. So you'd think it would have covered it, and I'd have $15 in my pocket? No, there's the whole, I'm not sure about you guys, but in California, you have to pay tax on the whole price of the phone. So it still would have cost me $105.
Huh. Ooh.
Weird. No, I don't think they do that here.
Yeah, I don't understand. You pay sales tax, not on the sale price, but on what it's valued at.
The MSRP?
But that should be included.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
That should get covered in your income tax, right?
Oh, maybe. I don't know about that. Yeah, I guess I can.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying. They shouldn't charge you that way because it should get. I mean, that should get worked out in your income tax, so it shouldn't get added to sales tax.
It's like some law out here.
What a bunch of nonsense! If you go a little bit north up to Oregon, there's no tax on what is it, food or sales items at all? I think.
Yeah, I think sales items. Yeah, I don't think, or at least a couple of years ago, I had heard that there was no sales tax at all up there. So.
Which I gotta tell you is nice because you go to buy something.
But are there jobs
like, oh,
up there?
Oh, it's this price. As I recall, no.
Yeah, you need to make that income.
But I think their employment rate's a little better than California or New Mexico. I mean, those are both pretty low.
Okay, cool. So should we get into what we've been playing?
I didn't talk about what I did this last.
Oh yeah,
week.
I'm sorry. Completely skipped you.
Jeez.
Tell me.
I'm gonna stab you with my mohawk. Well, many of you know that I like to travel. So this last week, I don't know if I do like to travel, but I don't always travel just because I like to. But this past week, I was in Las Vegas for our big international Aikido convention. Mm-hmm. And I learned a bunch of really cool, subtle Jedi tactics. And I learned a bunch of really good teaching techniques, which is good because I'm going to be teaching my own Aikido class starting at the end of the month. Twice a week. So if any of you are in Santa Fe and you want to come learn some Jedi martial arts, you should come find me.
Do we get our own lightsabers if we enroll?
Not right away. you start out as a Padawan, so no lightsaber yet. And Padawans didn't have lightsabers, right?
No, they don't get one yet. They could cut off their arm or their penis.
Right, exactly.
Or they get killed by Anakin Skywalker. It does not end well.
When do we fight, Samurai Age?
When do we fight?
Yeah.
You and I?
Yeah. Well, square off. Aikido to the...
I guess when you attack me... Well, but the philosophy of Aikido is that I would never...
No, spar.
...go out of my way.
No, real fight.
Yeah, but
we could fight on the show.
Aikido, we could verbally fight on the show. That would be okay. We could spar, but the whole thing relies on you. So basically what would happen if we sparred is you would attack me and I would end up with you on the ground... pinning you, and then that would be the end of it. So it wouldn't be like...
Sector would like that.
Maybe. He might prefer if it was him instead of you.
Yeah. So that was a long setup just to get there. So anyway, let's talk about what we've been playing. Who wants to kick things off?
I think you do, Robert.
I do. You guys remember... Was it 2010, 2009, the E3 Project Natal demo? The one that became the...
That stupid thing, yes.
You guys remember that, Blue? You remember that? That was the year
I didn't really give a shit about Kinect that much when I saw it, so I just kind of like tucked it away into that part of my brain where I just don't clean, never go in. It's like the closet you shove everything into and never open.
Okay. I think that was the last year for me that Microsoft invited me they actually invited me the next year, but I refused. But that was the year that Malamu, he showed off Milo. That was the little 10-year-old boy you can talk to. You could draw pictures on a piece of paper. He'd recognize it. Remember all those things you could scan? Like the skateboard, and it would appear in game, like in
I do remember that. Nothing ever came of it, though.
Yeah. Like Microsoft always does, like with what was her name, Velocity Girl. The actual product hasn't done any of that. Like it was just total hype. I'm sorry.
And on top of all of that, you couldn't swear at him, and you couldn't reprimand him, and you couldn't tell him he was a little shit. So I mean, really,
you wanted to spank him?
No, I didn't. But
you've
the whole
been a
thing
bad
seemed
boy,
great.
Milo.
See, I remember it because that was the year when my esteem for Peter Molyneux sort of plummeted. That was the turning point. And I had to ask the question, which no one seemed able to answer. You know, I sort of looked around online to see people's response, like the company's response to things. And I never found anything coming close to an answer to the question of why would I take my free time to tutor and interact with and play with an imaginary boy who doesn't grow and doesn't develop, when I could, if I really wanted to do that, go be a big brother or a big sister and see real results in a real person who actually needs the attention.
But we could say that about all games. We could say, why don't you throw a real football instead of playing John Madden?
No, because there's a very good answer to that. Because in real life, I can't be a football player. I will never be a professional football player.
You could throw it around.
I can't.
You could exercise.
Yeah, but you can't. No, that's true. But I'm saying in terms of, I mean, some of the Wii Fit games come close to this same complaint, but at least the plus there is that it's variable to your particular, you know, whatever your out of shape or very in shape exercise level is. But Milo completely focused around you're giving all of your attention to, but like, I mean, because you're tutoring him, like some of the demo stuff they showed is like you tutor him in math and shit. And it's like, why would I do that when I could go tutor a real human being in math who actually needs it, who years later is going to come back and say, gee, Sage, thanks so much for being my big sister because it totally made a difference in my life. And this kid is always going to be a 10-year-old twit.
Yeah. Okay. You might have won round one because, yeah, it didn't look fun.
Now, you could probably have some fun with that, though. You could teach him that 2 plus 2 equals 5.
No, that was the thing. You can't really teach him wrong. And
I do that with real kids all the time. Just kidding. I don't do that. but anyway, where were we? Velocity Girl. I remember talking about that. And it didn't kind of live up to the hype at all. And we lost a little bit of faith in Malamute. Just like we lost a little bit in Ken Levine when he was pumping up the move. Remember that?
Yeah, that made me a little sick.
So what Kinect has delivered was this handful of software that, I don't know, in the case of UFC personal fitness, it can't recognize a single push-up. Oh, and by the way, I just mentioned Best Buy. I'm totally off topic here. The Burbank, California Best Buy had this large Kinect demo area, which is basically, you know, in the middle of their store. And I saw this one guy, he's an Army recruiter, and he was trying UFC there. And guess what? It couldn't recognize his push-ups. So in the spirit of our Twitter friend, Jeremy Lamont, I yelled, do a girl push-up. And he thought that was pretty funny. I started talking to him, so I wanted to give Sergeant Jose Chavez a shout out for trying to do some push-ups. But the
Kinect, hey Sarge, thanks for trying to do push-ups.
But no. So anyway, back to Kinect. The only thing for me that the sensor does well is recognize where your hands are, which worked well for mm-hmm. you know, Child of Eden. Fortunately, that's the input needed to play Fruit Ninja Kinect, which is a XBLA game based on Half-Brick, their iPhone title, their big breakthrough kind of title. I know that they did, we reviewed Echoes and Blast Off and a lot of their indie stuff, and I talked to Phil recently, and he's probably going to come on the show next week. For anyone that hasn't played it, the game itself is pretty simple, but also pretty addictive. It throws fruit in the air, and you have to chop it in half. There's the occasional bomb, which you can't touch or the game immediately ends. And alternatively, if you miss 3 fruit, the game ends. Now, on the iPhone or iPad, you knew exactly where you would slice because it would be right under your finger. I'm touching my mouse pad right now, but you guys can't see that. So without a touch screen, Fruit Ninja, it loses a little bit of this immersion, but it's still kind of balanced enough to know that you are swinging and not just slightly moving your body, if that makes sense. So you see the shadow of yourself kind of in this backdrop. And occasionally I would slice, or I think I was slicing through fruit, and the thing missed, requiring a second swipe. But, you know, most of the time it worked. There's some variations which do things. There's an arcade classic mode that will toss like a pomegranate or the striped banana. For the pomegranate, you have to kind of rapidly slice, and with the banana, it kind of slows things on screen. The pomegranate kind of shows the limitation of the game because I'm doing this like ninja speed jazz hands, and it doesn't register all of the hits there. Mm-hmm. The one thing is that there was this knockoff game. Fruit Ninja was really popular on the iPhone, and like every week they put out these knockoffs. And one of them, instead of chopping the fruit in half, you could chop it in quarters for bonus points. And I really kind of like that. I wish they had included that option. So that's it. Nice. You know, it's deep enough to warrant the $10. It's not a great game, but they do keep it simple, which I think is, you know, if Kinect has a forte, it's just like, keep it simple. You really can't seem to do a lot of the things that Microsoft promised, at least for me.
Now, isn't there something that's just like Fruit Ninja, but it was like in WarioWare on the DS?
Yeah, there are. I think there were for the DS version, and I want to say even the WiiWare, the Wii version. I forgot smooth moves. there was something, you know, very similar to that on there. But it is a lot deeper than that, I'd say. Yeah, Simmery.
I mean, here's my feeling about the Kinect. So, you know, my experience with it is pretty limited, but when I went to the Ubisoft party at E3, the nighttime, you know, company party they had.
Gala.
They had the gala, right? They had a bunch of Kinects set up, and the only games they had for people to play were ones that were very much like simple, hand-focused. Mm-hmm. That's all you were doing, which I think speaks to the fact that they know it's a weak point. But my biggest complaint and comment to them would be, how is it, what system was it that it's somewhere between 2001, 2003, because I remember I was sort of an upper schooler in high school, and what system was it that had the same thing? It had a sensor, and you would like try and catch things with your hands.
The iToy? You try to hit balls?
No, I don't think it was the iToy. I think it was for one of the consoles, wasn't it?
You know, the iToy was for PS2, right, Blue?
Yeah.
And they had one game, I remember. It was this little town, and you would kind of block ninjas, and you would do these arm sweeps.
Exactly.
That was it. It was the iToy, actually you use for the the next generation of it, you use for the Move. There is the camera that picks up movement for that periphery.
Right. But my criticism of the Kinect is that, how have they come up with anything that's any different? And in my opinion, they haven't. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's not even close to as functional as the iToy, which came out, you know, 10 years prior, about. Almost.
I guess the fidelity, if you do play like Dance Central, has increased. But beyond that game, most games that are really involved don't work that well.
Exactly. And I think it's really funny. Like the Wii was something different. You know, the Wii was something that was the same idea, but they took they really did take the technology further, and they have continued. I mean, up until this year, when they're sort of on hold because they're saying, well, the Wii U is going to be our next advancement. It's not quite ready yet, which we'll see if that ends up being true or not. But other than that, they have continued to improve their technology every year. And the Move, to its credit, has tried. I mean, I don't think that, you know, Sony actually does as good a job with that as Nintendo does, but they've tried to continue to, like, add, you know, support, peripherals, and increase the complication of games and everything. And the Kinect just seems like it started out as a silly kind of thing that maybe had some practical applications, and it's just gone downhill from there.
I think they sold enough to really make their money, and they just kind of petered out, and they're not supporting it as much. I mean, maybe they have some stuff on the horizon. You know, Gunstringer might be popular, a few games here and there, but I don't see anything that's must have quality.
Right. If I had any kind of clout in the video game, or maybe someday I will, and my Hawk will become so popular that people will give a shit what I say, but if I had any kind of clout in the video game community, I would demand that they issue an apology for not giving a shit, and an admission that they don't give a shit, and that they move on and do something.
23 Kinect games.
You heard it here. No, I think that if I was in Microsoft and I was outside Microsoft, the outside me would demand the following of them, and then this is what I would do. For them to, you know, come up and say, we're sorry, we don't really care about this technology, honestly, and we're not really doing much with it, so we're sorry that we wasted your time.
Has Microsoft ever apologized?
No, of course not, but this is what they should do.
Vista,
and then they should say,
we're
going to come out with something that they should go in a different direction.
Okay. They just come out with the new product, right?
No, I know. But, like, they should, like when Windows, like, so Windows operating systems, when Vista came out, or not Vista, when 7 came, well, Vista and 7, when that era came out, they were trying to do something different with their OS. And not that they didn't do the same, like, we're going to release one version, the next one will be better, no, no, no. But they actually did try to go into a different direction. So, you know, that they are capable, I think, of doing it. Maybe. Maybe they have no creative thought in the company.
Did you ever try playing
a
game on Vista?
It was shite,
run, like,
as
Halo?
I recall.
Yeah. I tried to run Halo. I was getting about 5 frames per second. Yeah,
no,
thanks,
no,
guys.
7. I mean, Vista, they started to think differently. 7 was different. 7 was well-made and it's different.
7 was the apology, is what I'm saying, for Vista.
That's true. So what I'm saying is maybe I would like an actual apology because I'm not subtle and I like people to say exactly what they mean. But at the very least, they should just drop the Kinect. I mean, they can still have it or whatever, but they should start putting money and time into some piece of technology that's different and effective and cool. And if it's even 2 of 3 of those things, that would be an improvement over the piece of shit Kinect that they have now.
You know what their apology is going to be? Kinect 2.
They shouldn't even call it Kinect. Kinect is such a failure that they should call
Kinect
it something
U.
else. You know what they should call it is...
And just put
I'm
a big
sorry,
middle finger on the box. Kinect U.
The logo is like the sensor bar with like a middle finger right in the middle of it.
Now we read your fingers. Kinect U.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. That would be better.
The best selling app. Meet Spin the Game.
Oh man. Ooh. But anyway, if I was Microsoft. Gross. If I was Microsoft, I would do something different. I would stop fucking around with the Kinect and I would move on.
I don't know. Sometimes I really don't know what Microsoft does, but that's them. Anyway, back to what I've been playing. Let's try to keep on track this week. I'm having difficulties. Next thing was a game that you might have heard of. It came out for, I believe, DSiWare. Also came out as a PSP Mini. It was called Mighty Flip Champs. And I heard... I'm sorry?
No, it's such a funny title.
Yeah, it's put out by our friends at WayForward, and I heard some really good things about it. But it's probably not a game for me. It doesn't mean it's a bad game. It's just not my cup of tea. So, like I said, it's this PSP kind of mini puzzler that splits the screen in the middle. On the left side is the actual landscape in your character, and on the right is this alternative environment, which when you flip moves you into it. That's kind of an awful explanation.
Like black and white or something.
Well, no, not really. Okay,
like that, not black and white, like that up and down, that flip game that's like Switch It or whatever, and there's the black landscape and the white one, and you can flip from one to the other. Do you know which one I'm talking
about? A little
bit,
but this one has multiple. Let me try it again. So imagine you're currently on a platform on the left side of the screen, which is a page that you're on, and on the right side, there's your representation on screen, but there's a drop below you. So if you flip the page, that becomes your new environment, and you fall accordingly. You know, you take that drop. Now, what you don't want to do is get caught in a wall, which is instant death. So the hook there is that it's not just black or white. There are 3 or 4 cycling pages, which makes you think... It makes it exponentially complicated because you're thinking, okay, how do I get to here from here? If you like your puzzles with simple mechanics, because it is just, left and right and one button, but with a deep challenge, I'd recommend, checking it out. I believe it's $2-3. More up my alley, because it kind of has this artsy aesthetic, is Auditorium HD, which is, I understand, still on PSN this week for the discounted price of $4.99. I think I'm selling it there. The idea here is that you bend and change the color of light beams to fill these on-screen reservoirs. Each one of these, you have a limited number of these circle gadgets, which have a set direction, and you can only alter their position on screen and their size. And so what you want to do is just, kind of fill these buckets there. While you're doing this, you have 2 soundtracks. One is playing this modern orchestral set, and the other gives you this minimal piano piece. It has move support, and I do like it. It has the ability to skip levels you can't solve so you don't get stuck, unlike Mighty Flip Champ.
Oh, nice.
It's one after the other. So I'd say it's worth its $5 admission price. I do wish that my one thing is that you could kind of screw around with the level after you solve it. But I guess that is, what was the name? Pixel Junk Lifelikes domain, actually making music there. So, and then
the other thing sounds like a free app that they have on the Zune HD.
Is it? Okay. What's the name of it?
Let's see. I think it's something... Dr. Optics Light Lab.
Okay.
I knew it had a doctor in it, but I couldn't remember what the rest
was. Is he a real doctor? Does he have a
Optics, I'm going to guess he probably just has one of those internet doctorates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thought. I'll check that out if I ever get a droid. Last thing is, after hearing about the death of Takashi Miyagi, I bought Grandia for the PSP and the PS3 there, which kind of reminded me of my appreciation for JRPGs. I know that the genre and I...
Wait, you forgot about how much you liked JRPGs? Since when did you forget?
When I returned from E3, I only saw one, maybe two. Yeah. And that kind of broke my heart a little bit. And I haven't played any. Yeah.
Listeners, you have been hearing a heartbroken Deagle the last few weeks. I hope you appreciate that. His heart had rebelled against the JRPG.
I mean, I saw Persona for the 3DS, and I saw an Atelier game, which...
Persona for the 3DS or the...
Shin Megami Tensei?
Was it that Overclocked?
Yeah, the Overclocked. Oh, maybe. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not Persona.
Devil Survivor? Is it?
Yeah, I think that's it. So
I was thinking Persona on the 3DS? Sold.
yeah, that would be awesome. But beyond those two, I really didn't see much as far as JRPGs. I saw some Western RPGs, which I'm sure I'll like, but nothing there. So anyway, Grandia is one of those games that I think really holds up 12 years later. Played originally over a decade ago. And I know, Sage, that you played a little bit, so let's kind of talk. I mean, without offering any spoilers, for those that are interested in trying the game, it's $10 on the PSN. I just wanted to, you know, kind of touch on a few things, wrote some notes. First is the music. It's really, like, hauntingly beautiful, I mean, from the title screen on. Funny thing is, I remember back in the day reading GamePro, and they said something like, you'll be reaching for the volume control. And I just couldn't disagree more. The voice acting is a little stilted, but there's something about it. It's endearing. But the game score, the actual musical score, is just phenomenal. I think it really, you know, holds up. A lot of people talk about it. You know, they hear main theme from Grandia. It just, you know, creates an emotion in them. So I really like that. Now, you played Grandia 2. How was the, which I didn't, how was the music in that?
Same, I mean, having not, because I didn't really play much of Grandia 1, so okay. Having not played much of the first one, I, just from description alone, would have to say it's about the same. There are scenes that I saved right before, just so that I would have a save file that would take me to this scene where, like, you walk into a chapel and the music is just so, again, hauntingly, overwhelmingly beautiful. It's some of the best game music I've ever heard. I tried for a long time to find a soundtrack, and I wasn't able to find one anywhere. If anyone knows where to find a Grandia 2 soundtrack, I will kiss you if I ever meet you in real life, because I would
Sector.
Love to have that.
There you go.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. No, the music is phenomenal, and again, the voice acting was actually really good. And Grandia was the first gaming to use to use voice acting in game and not just as cutscenes.
So yeah,
I think they were the very first title to do that.
And one of the things
little known trivia.
In the first game, the beginning of this game has a sequence where Sue, she's one of the main characters, she's seen running through this polygonal city. And despite the power of the PS1, I mean, the sequence still looks great. The camera is kind of tracking her from high above, and it's following her around every corner in this really cinematic style. It's almost like Robert Zemeckis, the opening of some of his movies. Later, Justin, he's the protagonist, and Sue, they're hiding from this group of soldiers. And the camera kind of at first focuses on the duo where they're talking, and then it closes in on the soldiers as they kind of notice something. They say, hey, what's that in the distance? And then the perspective kind of moves back to where Justin and Sue were. We don't see them. And then they come out from, you know, behind a wall. And it's just an example of something that's very, you know, kind of cinematic and really masterful. It's really hard to believe that, you know, someone 19 years old could lead the game's design. I mean, it's a really amazing RPG that I would at least encourage any fan to check out.
Yeah, it was a beautiful envisioning, I think, the whole, you know, the whole series. The second one also has really nice jumps between cutscenes and gameplay, and they're for the most part not too jarring. I think the only one I can think of that's a little is there's one character who has a very if her rage meter goes too high in battle, it jumps to a very dynamic cutscene where she gets pissed and starts throwing out different, you know, spells and stuff. And mm-hmm. that jump was a little, you know, dodgy volume-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like, the sound levels didn't match. But other than that, the cutscenes are always great, and there's a real...
That happens to Blue what? When we talk about the 3DS on the podcast. The sound level just goes off the chart. Red zones for the...
Rage!
For right. The next 15 minutes.
That's what it is. Blue has a rage meter.
Blue that wants to use rage.
That actually makes sense, because it was after you got all rageful about your purchase last time that the sound got all effed up. I think you do have a rage meter that changes your volume.
There you go.
But no, and again, it was a beautiful story. The story was pretty complex for that time without being like overly... I mean, some JRPGs just throw so much crap in there that your head is sort of spinning, yep. you know, by the time you definitely. Get part of the plot. But Grandia 2 kept it at a very, like, good pace. It wasn't underwhelming. It wasn't overwhelming. There's moving, you know, protagonist-antagonist conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that was a little funny about it in terms of being an RPG is there were some bosses that were kind of tough, and then mm-hmm. there were some areas where you could sort it, because there were respawning enemies, and you could sort it cheat a little bit and just hang out in an area for, like, you know, hours, just killing the same people over and over again to level up, so that by the time you got to that boss that's supposed to be pretty, like, on the edge of your seat difficult, mm-hmm. you know, you could sort of pancake over him because you'd leveled up. So, I mean, mm-hmm. but again, you'd have to want to. I mean, you'd have to want to sit there for, like, 3 hours leveling up and leveling up and leveling up. So it's mm-hmm. pretty well balanced. There was that one, you know, you could sort of finagle the system in some areas if you wanted to.
Hmm. I really liked Grandia's combat system, too. It was very quick. It loaded, you know, loads up almost immediately. Uses where you kind of flip through by pressing right or left. You have the various options, and it just feels quick, snappy. It mm-hmm. doesn't have that slow, methodical. It's still turn-based, but that real kind of slow, clunky feel that some RPGs have. So
some
totally
Blue. Yeah. Rage meter going up.
Not all, but have you, Blue, if you've never tried Grandia or Grandia 2, I would check it out, especially number 2, because there's the demon chick who has the rage meter, which is pretty sexy, and so I'm sure you can empathize with her rage, but it is a pretty good, it's a pretty fast-flowing, pretty good RPG, and it keeps you engaged, so you should check it out before you denounce, you know, RPGs as a...
I give RPGs a hard time, but I love them. I just never Lunar get around 2. To finishing them.
He just bought Lunar okay. 2. He gets a free pass for this week.
That's true.
Or maybe
but
the
this
farm.
Is when you can finish. I mean, there are RPGs that have come out, like, in the last couple of years that really, if you don't have the time to really commit to them, you are not going to finish them.
I mean, wasn't Final Fantasy 13, like, 80-something hours?
No.
Or 70 hours?
It's not that long.
No? I thought I remember it was that long.
I mean, maybe you could put... No, I don't think it was that
long. Maybe you could make it that long.
Yeah, I got to check out my... I wonder if it keeps track how much time you spent, but I don't feel it was that long. But that last
But Grandia 2 is definitely beatable. Mm-hmm. It's not too long.
No. And the one thing at least I liked about Grandia was this feeling of kind of being overwhelmed. You go in certain environments, like at the very beginning, you're looking for, you know, these three different items, and this fairly, you know, you're kind of thrown into the city, and later on you're going through these ruins and you feel kind of lost. There's certain mm-hmm. points later on where you can have this overhead view. But naturally, the game kind of steers you. It just drops hints at the right place for you, where you feel you have that mm-hmm. feeling of being overwhelmed. But it was focused enough to say, okay, here's what the player's going to do. I'm going to give them a little hint right now, which is cool.
Before AI directors were really AI directors, he had his finger on the hot pulse. He was like, I have AI thoughts. I know where people are going to get lost and confused.
Yeah, focus testing before that. So what have you been playing, Samurai Age?
Well, because I was off doing Aikido nonsense, I didn't get a chance to play too much. Upon getting home last night, I jumped a little bit back into Catherine and Alice Madness to get a little caught up, but I still haven't... gotten through them all the way, and I want to.
Which way are you going on your meter? Are you more the cherub, or are you more the devil?
I've I've ended up, you know, I really was not planning, like, some games I end up figuring I'm going to be, like, the, you know, the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of this stuff, the questions, like, I didn't, I mean, to me it was like, well, that's not a big deal, and I'd answer, and it was totally,
evil.
No, I've gone the cherub direction. Well, some of my answers were really, like, dropped it pretty far down, but I think what really was the turning point was that most of my texts to the McBride, mm-hmm. Catherine,
mm-hmm.
are pretty like, hey, you can call me if you need me because I'm not trying to be a dick because I'm not a dick. Well, I'm not a dick. I don't like her that much. I'm just not an asshole.
I always do that. I always send I send the most polite texts imagined.
Right.
Game, yeah.
And then as the game went going on, I did get to a point where I think it was the last. It might have been right after the
me.
Like. What?
You were like, hey,
oh,
stop
yeah.
bothering
no,
me.
No.
I'm busy
but not,
right now.
But not to McBride. To the blonde Catherine.
Okay.
When she said, I'm going to.
Spoiler.
And I had the. Oh, well, whatever. Terrible. No, everybody knows that one.
No.
Because I've seen that online all over the place.
Okay. Well, we're going to avoid that, so.
Well, anyway. Okay. I won't say anything else that could be construed as a spoiler. But anyway, it got to a certain point where I kind of wanted her to bugger off because she was getting kind of up in my face, and my life is already crazy, so, you know, I don't want to deal with any more, you know, stress. But someone commented on the website, on our website,
99
and I agree.
Problems and Catherine ain't one.
No, opposite. She's all of them. She's all 99 problems.
She's kind of funny.
Because they both have their strong points, but the way that I'm feeling playing it, and maybe it's just because my life is a little hectic and overwhelming right now in real life, I don't really want either of them. Like, I'm a little more cherubic, and so that way, like, I guess I'm leaning towards McBride as far as the storyline goes, but really I don't want either of them. They're both annoying the hell out of me.
Never mind.
What?
Somebody asked me if there was, like, a secret ménage à trois ending.
Oh, ménage à trois? Did you just say ménage à trois ending?
No, but I'm leaving that in. That could be
there
the title of the show.
Ménage à trois ending? Ménage à trois? That would be a little intense.
Is that a Freudian slip on the show?
I think that's so. that's going to be the greatest episode title yet.
Is there a ménage à trois ending for the Catherine? That you know of, Deagle?
No, there's not, sadly, that I'm aware of.
So I read a thing that said there are 8 different endings.
Correct.
Mm. But when we were in the meeting with them, they told us 7.
Did they? I don't remember.
They did, because he said... Maybe that's well, see, that's what I'm confused about, because he said, when we were meeting with him, he said, there are over half a dozen endings, and then he said, and off the record, it's 7. But on the record that we should say, it's over half a dozen. And then when it came out and I was reading all this stuff, it was like 8 endings, and I was like, did they add one? Hmm. Or did he just forget that there was another one?
I don't know. I played through it once on my second playthrough, and... I kind of find myself repeating the same things, and I have to tell myself, like, right. Don't be me, be more of a jerk.
When I was playing, like, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, mm-hmm. you know, when that came out, mm-hmm. it's like, the first playthrough, good Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Second playthrough, it's like you don't do like the wishy-washy answers, it's like straight up evil, you know?
Right.
I guess my MO usually ends up being that I pick maybe this is because I do acting, but I pick a character to be.
Hmm.
And so, I mean, usually the first time I play through is myself, and then if I play through again, I think of a new, either based on someone else I know in real life, or I invent a new sort of character profile.
You ever played Sean Nola?
I have never played as Sean Nola, no, but maybe I should try.
Remember that guy? Just kidding. I know you're listening. We love you.
Is he? I we miss you, Sean.
Okay, sorry.
Anyway, our heartfelt nostalgic moment in the past.
For emotion. Okay,
that
that's
should
done.
Be the title. The emo cast.
No.
And that's what makes me feel sad.
Also cutting myself.
I cut myself to feel. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes I sever an artery and have to go to the emergency room.
Yes. Remember, kids, down the tracks, not across.
Oh my God. Remember, kids, don't cut yourself. It's not worth it. And don't ever listen to Deagle.
I'm a Darwinist.
That is personal.
Just helping people reach their natural
That's
outcome.
That's their potential.
Yeah. Yes, reach inner potential.
Natural selection.
But anyway, if you're having a hard time, you know, figuring out how to make the wrong or different choices, then just pretend to be somebody else like Sean Nola and make the choices that that other person would make. Anyway, other than Catherine, which I will, you know, as soon as I actually finish, I'll have a comment on, you know, how I feel about the ending, but,
Who's scratching in the middle of the podcast, by the way?
Scratching?
Yeah.
Wasn't me.
Okay. Somebody is hitting up a mix right now. Okay, sorry. Continue.
That's weird. Mm-hmm. I hit up some more Alice Madness, and all I have to say about it so far, other than that I really like it as a game, is I really like the costuming and set design.
Mm-hmm. You are an actress, if you're calling a game set design.
I know.
The world is a stage.
I know, but that was, that's how it popped into my head. No, I really, the scenery, the world, the environments. the environmental.
The mise en toi.
The mise en toi is very, je ne sais pas, no. it's really cool. It's a very grand scale. It feels epic without feeling overwhelming, which I like. And her costumes are so cool that I'm actually thinking about trying to put one together for Nondiscon, which is an anime convention, but I haven't found a good anime character I want to go as yet, so I may one of the days don her costume or else do that for Halloween this year.
She's not really anime. Just so I'd break your heart.
No, I know.
Okay. So Cammy's
out. But some people do Cammy.
Blue, inform her.
Cammy is out. No, I know who Cammy is. Okay. Cammy is out.
Okay, Cammy's out.
Cammy is my gaming goddess.
Really? Why is that?
Well, have you seen her attire?
I know it. I just like how she looks. There's more to a woman.
She has a British accent, too, and it's really nice. Very
oh, my sweet. God. You're like a teenage girl. She looks so cool, and I love her accent.
Are we talking about Laura or Cammy?
This is just me, but I don't like the new Laura Croft.
Yeah, she looks like a little boy.
No, I liked the Laura that was that they were doing in like Tomb Raider Legend and Anniversary and Tomb Raider Underworld. I didn't see the need to drop that continuum in favor of a reboot. It just doesn't grip me in the same way. It's like it feels like it's Tomb Raider in name only or Laura Croft in name only.
I want to reserve judgment until I actually play it, and I don't know. I don't think the designers would. For them to kind of throw sexuality out the window like that is kind of cool, and there's probably a reason that they're going for it. And I don't know, I'm looking forward to seeing that.
On the other hand, it not only asks a big leap of your fans, but in some ways it's sort of dismissive of what people do like about your series, because you could tone down the sexuality and in trying to achieve it that way, but to remove it, I mean, part of what people like about the Tomb Raider series is that she's a vivacious, stunning-looking woman, and that's, you know, something that they've grown to love, and
I guess I admire that. I admire throwing out what you have kind of been dependent on, because we've been sold Laura is kind of, you know, because she is, you know, she looks a certain way, and that's part of the game, and to throw that out. Because what do you have left is just pure gameplay. So I kind of admire that in the game.
But I feel like there's a disorientation that happens when you because in anything where you can see your character and you have to become empathetic to like this character is me or at least this is the character who I'm like sort of God view following through this game.
Mm-hmm.
If that character suddenly changes in appearance, it can be disorienting for the gamer, and that can create a disattraction, a repulsion.
But I think
But
I think the reboot has eliminated that notion of like intertextuality. Like we look at Batman, and you know the new Spider-Man. There's no longer Tobey Maguire. We just kind of accept that. In movies. So I think they're
but
games.
There's a difference there because in movies you're watching characters. You are not the character, and in games you are the character.
It's like when you get like attached to like one iteration of the character, you kind of want to see that iteration continued over into like the next generation or another game in the series. I liked the Laura from, you know, Legend and anniversary in Underworld and stuff like that, because, you know, she was attractive, and I think she's the best looking Laura in the series. But it's like in the cutscenes and, you know, through the dialogue, you could tell that she was brilliant. She's not just this hot brunette with big cans. It's like she's athletic. She's got a brain. She knows what, 3 or 4 languages or something like that. It's
algebra also.
Yeah, it's like I really didn't feel the need that they needed to get rid of that Laura. I thought that the one that they had established in the previous trilogy was perfectly fine and worth keeping around.
Okay.
Maybe it needed a new arc or series, but or something like that. You didn't need to throw that Laura out the window.
I think for me, what it's kind of akin to is in the Matrix, when Neo is first in the like real actual world, and Morpheus says to him, or Orpheus, whatever his name is, says to him, you know, you could look like when you plug into the system, you could look like whatever you wanted to, but you know, subconsciously choose a look that's something that is familiar to you from when you were plugged in and you didn't know that this real world existed. And I think that that's sort of what it is that we get comfortable, not that it's unbreakable, but that if the change is too dramatic too quickly, like, you know, Sam Fisher from Splinter Cell, his look does change throughout the games, but it's subtle. It's not like an instant, suddenly he's got pink hair and he's a skinny little British punk or something.
And I think more importantly, his voice remains the same.
Yeah, his voice remained the same. And I think that there are some aspects that, you know, you get attached to this character that I associate with and that I want to play as, that I become while I'm playing, looks a certain way. And if all of a sudden that changes too drastically, you feel sort of, you know, disassociated from the game, which isn't always bad, but can hurt the gameplay, like as a game.
Like when he was wearing a hoodie, he was beating up the hot dog vendor. that can game.
Yes. No, actually, when all of a sudden you see Sam Fisher in street clothes for the first time, it was kind of jarring. It wasn't, like you said, his voice is the same, so it doesn't take you so much out of the game that you're like, I can't play this. This isn't Splinter Cell. But it was a really, I remember thinking that. I remember thinking, whoa, this is not the Sam Fisher I know. He's wearing street clothes. That's so strange. But
he also had a beard, if I recall correctly, too.
He was scruffy. I don't know if it was like a full-on mountain man beard. He had some scruff.
Mountain man.
he wasn't mountain man Fisher. Sam Fisher. Just kind of scrushy.
With the 5 o'clock shadow.
He's not out in the like Yellowstone National Park building a log cabin by hand, is he?
No, he's not. He's not beating up bears using flash grenades.
Take that, Yogi.
Although, actually, I know someone who did that in real life.
Took out a bear with a flash grenade?
Yeah.
He should be on the show.
I can invite him if you want. He's my senpai from martial arts, and he went
hand to hand
when he was younger. When he was a Boy Scout, when he was younger, their troop leader was like this old ex-military guy, and he took them out camping. And in the middle of the night, there was a bear. And so the kids all hear this bear, and they're like, oh, shit. And they go try to wake him up, and he's this military guy, and he's like, don't fucking wake me up in the middle of the night. And they're like, no, there's a bear, there's a bear. And he doesn't believe them, and then he looks out the tent, and he sees the bear, which is, like, you know, 10 feet away, and he's like, hold on. And he goes back in the tent, and all they see is his arm come out and chuck something, and it's like a flash grenade, and it goes off, and the bear gets totally, you know, spaced out and runs off. And he was like, now go back to sleep. Just went back to bed.
Oh, so he didn't actually kill
him. No, he just made it go away. But
I could have sworn that the line, let me show you how to kill a bear, was gonna show up at some point in that story.
No. I'm just trying to figure out how to Photoshop bears and flash grenades.
I think we could do it.
It's gonna be hard.
So that you can have that be the picture.
Yeah, exactly.
Take like just, a sticky grenade a from Halo and have it flying towards Yogi's head.
Fire in the hole.
Or actually, I like that better. You could just get a picture of a bear at a stream and then have like a starburst going off next to it. But Ranger, I like the sticky grenade. Is that
Ranger Smith?
Is that like a blue spider
with the Sam Fisher headgear on?
Yeah, okay. Right.
I told you he was going to get mad if you stole that picnic basket.
There you go.
Now he's got the grenades out.
Anyway, you play anything else? Speaking of bears and flash grenades.
No, but this coming week I will, because I start law classes. At the 2 weeks from now, so this next week will be my last week to sort of devote a lot of time to video games, and then I'll have less time.
Okay. Before you become what was that one guy that would always complain about hot coffee? Jack Thompson. before you become the next Jack Thompson?
You never hear about that guy.
He got disbarred, that's why. I think he's selling shoes. Yeah, he's selling shoes in Miami.
Really?
I won't be that kind of lawyer. I would do, like, social justice and environmental stuff.
Social justice. Stand up for the bears that get flashed.
Like Harvey Birdman, attorney at law.
Blue, what have you been playing?
Well, I guess I'll start out with the we were talking about Rage Meter, and there's nothing that represents rage better than Godzilla.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. True. I was thinking you were going to say Rage.
My next column game, it's Super Godzilla for the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And basically with this wonderful game, and you might want to put wonderful in air quotes, basically you are controlling Godzilla as he's maneuvering through a map on the bottom screen, and you see like a live camera of him on the top screen. And basically, I guess the Japanese self-defense force is controlling Godzilla, and yet the tanks are still shooting him.
What?
There's a breakdown in communication.
Basically, it's like, aside from that rather contradictory gameplay element,
Japanese tanks shooting, or are they Chinese or North Korean tanks?
Well, considering that like the first stage takes place in Osaka, I'm going to assume that it's a Japanese self-defense force shooting a monster that is being controlled by the Japanese self-defense force.
Friendly fire.
But no, if the Japanese self-defense force is controlling Godzilla, then maybe China or Korea is trying to invade Japan, and they're controlling him to try and defend Japan?
With flash grenades.
No? Is that not possible? I mean, it seems like that's a pretty blatant contradiction. There's got to be an answer to that.
They're running him through his paces. Godzilla can handle it. So they just want to see, you know, what he's capable of enduring.
Will that mind control device truly work under all circumstances?
What if he goes AWOL, just starts ripping up buildings? It's like, screw this.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You can actually rip through buildings. In some stages, you have to rip through, like, mountains or buildings to get to where the enemy is.
Hmm.
You have, like, a rectangular map along the bottom. And you'll have, like, about 4, 6, or 8 different sections of the map.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you walk to the top, you'll go to the next area. Sometimes the enemy will be on the other side of the map or the next map over or something like that. Basically, it's like sometimes you'll have to tear through like high power electrical wires or something like that. And you'll have to, like, for example, in the third stage, the professor, and that's all they call him, is the professor, as far as I know, is kidnapped by the alien race. Now, I'm not sure whether it's the aliens from the third planet of the black hole or the Exilians.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, you lost me at third planet of the black hole.
Well, you see, that was what there was an alien race in the original 1974, you know, 73, 74 Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla series.
Okay.
It's like, really? Mechagodzilla was controlled by an alien race.
Not the Predators?
Well, the thing is, it's like they looked like humans, but after they were shot, they looked like some weird gorillas from outer space with teeth on their face or something like that, or horns on their face. It looks like something.
It sounds like a million different movies and video games got mushed together into one thing.
Yeah.
Ultraman shows up and kicks ass.
And then Ultraman.
Now, I gotta tell you, I mean, I wish there was a good Ultraman game out, because I watched the entire series last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that was done by the same guy who did the effects for some of the Godzilla movies. As a matter of fact, one of the monsters in one of the Ultraman episodes was just Godzilla with like one of those like collarbone hood type things that you'll see like on a Triceratops or an iguana or something like that.
Yep.
And it was just Godzilla painted like light green as opposed to like dark green or gray or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I just wish if they redid Ultraman, he had more battery life than my iPhone. Because that was like the tension in everyone. That damn thing would quit, you know, would start beeping. That little red light.
Yeah, that light indicator on his chest.
I was like, come on. Did they do that every show?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, they milked that
one to death.
The rays
from the sun could cause Ultraman to die if he's exposed to them for too long.
It's Like, did they ever figure out maybe if we didn't do it every single fucking episode, it would be interesting?
I don't know if they ever
did. The sun can kill you.
No. I don't know if
they
ever did.
Put some SPF on, Ultraman.
So it's that episode of Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, when he finds out that the sun could give you cancer. So he's like, the sun can kill you. So he starts putting on all this, like, 1,000 SPF sun cream. But he gets his powers from the sun. So he keeps falling asleep, like, in court and everything because he doesn't have access to the sun because he's like, it could kill me. So he keeps putting on sunscreen.
That sounds pretty awesome. Right? That's your role model these days, Harvey Birdman?
Yes, I want to be just like, but only when he's an attorney, not from the cartoon, actually.
No Phoenix Wright.
Just attorney version. Yeah.
Did anybody really care about Birdman until Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law?
No.
There's this thing called Generations Older Than Us. And that was what they had for cartoons, so yes, I would say they probably did.
that would be me, and no. The answer's no.
Oh, yeah, I forgot your
I never even heard of it until Harvey Birdman.
Neither did I.
Because I was watching Ultraman.
It's like with some of the cartoons from like the 70s and the 80s, it's like you were still seeing reruns of them on Cartoon Network. I mean, you still see Scooby-Doo episodes on Cartoon Network, I think.
There were Hanna-Barbera cartoons which weren't popular with everybody, because if you were already into Looney Tunes and sort of the other ones, I don't think those people watched Hanna-Barbera, which was like Harvey Birdman and Grape Ape and the race car one and the... and then if you were into Hanna-Barbera cartoons, you were really into Hanna, because I meet people who like know every single character from her cartoons, and that's who they love.
I wouldn't admit to knowing those people.
You would, or we would?
Would not.
Why? She is. I like those cartoons.
But to know every single one, worrisome.
Well.
So Super Godzilla, not super.
Well, I mean, until like Destroy All Monsters Melee came out in like 2003, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was the best Godzilla game of, like, it was the cherry topping on the shit sundae, if you will.
Wow, that's terrible.
I don't want to ask what the whipped cream represents.
Probably Godzilla for the Game Boy.
Oh.
But it's like, I mean, it basically, it's like there are two, it's like you have two sections of the game. You have the part where you're navigating Godzilla through the map. Mm-hmm. And you'll have to, like, find the professor, and he's hidden in this one base. And you have to find the real base, because the other bases are booby-trapped by the aliens.
You said
and it's like, after you find and rescue the professor, Biollante shows up. And you'll have to go to the center, to, like, one of the sections of the lake that's in the stage. It's like the lake takes up, like, portions of, like, all six of the sections of the map. And you'll have to go track down Biollante. And when you navigate your blue dot, which is Godzilla, how he's represented on the map, to the pink dot, which is what the enemy is, then it switches to a 2D perspective. Mm-hmm. And you have Godzilla on one side and the enemy monster on the other. And your goal is to navigate Godzilla over to the enemy to punch them. Then, after you punch them, you walk backwards, and this little box at the bottom of the screen cycles through the different moves you can do, like fire breath.
So does it look like you're moonwalking Godzilla?
It's just kind of, I think the feet just kind of like bounce up and down backwards instead of like back up
so
and
he's
down
like,
forwards. It's just like the reverse.
So he's like a puppet.
Yeah, pretty much. And basically, it's like, you know, you'll punch him, you'll start walking backwards to do an attack, but not every attack works on your opponents. Like with Biollante, you couldn't do like a tackle attack or a headbutt attack, because Biollante would just kind of like bounce back and then hit you, and you would take the damage. It's kind of like this. It's almost like Street Fighter meets an RPG. You know, certain attacks will do only so much damage, and so, you know, certain attacks won't work. It's like you'll have to find which attack works best on the enemy. Like with Biollante, it's like the super atomic breath is what would really hammer the damage to it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you tried to use your breath on Mechagodzilla, which was the boss of the second stage, it would do that force field thing from the 1970s movie, you know, the one where he spins his head around real fast and like a force field appears. and would bounce. It would stop the fire breath, and then Mechagodzilla would shoot a missile out of its chest, and it would hit you. And you wouldn't. Basically, if you chose the wrong attack, you'd be on the wrong side of the damage.
Mm-hmm.
And
sounds like a Pokemon battle.
It's a very unique mix, and it's like you have another thing is you have a spirit meter, the spirit meter for Godzilla and the enemy monster, right above the attack, you know, with the attack moves and, you know, the health for each of the monsters. And basically, it's like the game cheats. There's no other way to put it. The monster doesn't have to, like, punch you first to launch their attack, but Godzilla has to punch the monster and then fall back a bit to launch an attack. And there are times when the monster, when, like, the enemy monster, like, with Mechagodzilla, it's like Mechagodzilla would kind of, like, do, like, a flash step, if you will, from Bleach. It's like it just kind of charge forward and hit Godzilla, do some damage, and push him back, and hammer the spirit meter. So you have to kind of like ease your way up while moving forward. It's like this weird game of mental chess. And one other problem with the gameplay is that the attacks that show up in the attack box at the bottom of the screen are random. And if Godzilla gets to the end of the screen, you have to move forward, then pull back a little bit more to try to cycle through to a different attack. And there are times when the enemy will be, like, right in front of you, and you are pretty much cornered, and there's nothing you can do but wait for them to attack you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's...
One question. Minya, Godzuki in the game?
No, but I wish they were. I'd love to stomp them. Oh.
You'd stomp Godzuki?
Yeah, Godzuki, yeah. I saw one episode of the Godzilla cartoon, and I wanted that little dragon to be like under King Ghidorah's foot.
He's got those cute little eyes. How could you?
Hanna-Barbera, you have done evil things to Godzilla.
Oh, Jesus.
Back to Hanna-Barbera. Speaking of evil things, why don't we move on to our interview? This week we have Ryan Phillips and Stephen Carlton from NISA talking about Bleach and an exclusive announcement. Hey guys, Desert Eagle here. Today I'm being joined by Ryan Phillips, who is NIS America's marketing coordinator, and Stephen Carlton, who's the editor, having recently worked on the Disgaea 4. So how's it going, guys? You're in a wind tunnel there? What's going on there?
Yeah, we're here, in between New Jersey and New York here, just kind of stuck in traffic.
So one of the things is I should mention, while I usually try to be this respected, objective-minded interview, I just may geek out and jump right into Disgaea 4 fanboyishness, so I apologize in advance. To counter this, I did ask our readers for some biting Mike Wallace-style questions. So,
perfect.
So if I just jump right in and start, you know, geeking out about D4...
Go ahead. Yeah.
So one of the things I want to talk about was Bleach Soul Resurrection, which is quite a coup for you guys. Let me ask you, how did you go about acquiring the rights to distributing the game here in the United States?
That went out, I guess, we actually were playing that late October.
Okay.
So it was in the works from late October. We had an early Japanese build, and we were like, oh man, this is pretty fun. And, you know, it's hack and slash. You know, most of the old Bleach other games were all a little bit more fighting, basically. Yeah, so it's kind of, it was a step away from that. So we're like, oh man, I hope, really hope we get this. And then we didn't hear a lot about it because it was kind of licensing for a while, until I guess it was the original press release was somewhere in like April or March, I think.
Okay.
And then, yeah, we nailed it, and then we just went forward. So it's been really awesome. It's completely like a 180 from, you know, our typical RPG, SRPG style niche game. So, I mean, right. It's a big market.
Which brings me to one of our questions, and this one was from F. Castro. I hope it's not Fidel. Maybe he's a fan of the game in his golden years. He says, this is NIS's first action game on console, and I'd like to correct them, guys. What was the first action game?
Oh, isn't it Pretty Couldn't I? Am I? Was what is?
No, I was going to say Viral Survival.
Okay, I guess, yeah, Viral would be.
Even though that's downloadable. So he asked, is this action game? Is this a sign of things to come? I hope you don't stop the JRPG love. Otherwise, Deagle will probably cry nonstop. Thanks. So that's what Fidel thinks of me. So he wants to know if this is, you know, kind of a harbinger of things to come.
You know, like, I think this year is a pretty big year for us because, you know, one, we worked with Bleach, but also, I mean, we also had Cave Story 3D in, mm-hmm. in the works. So again, both games are kind of both niche, which kind of falls in line with what we usually like to put out. But at the same time, you know, they're like 100% action.
Yeah. Like,
maybe they have a few small RPG facets in there. I think that's why we like them. But I think ultimately, yeah, I really am excited for next year to see what we put out. But I hope it's a harbinger. We haven't told too much what's going on for next year just yet. But, I mean, it's definitely looking like that's going to be it. A little bit more expansion, trying other genres.
One thing I want to know is how much of the changes from back when it was Soul Ignition to Soul Resurrection were made here. I know you guys probably handled the translation and voice acting, but from what I recall, the response to the Soul Ignition demo wasn't too great. Were there any tweaks there?
Yeah, that debuted, I think it was on Christmas or right around there last year on the Japanese PSN as like a free download.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think there were a lot of qualms with kind of just the background, the targeting, and then just in general. I don't think it was like by any means a final build of the game, because the Japanese build just came out not too long ago in Japan. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, there were a lot of things, a lot of colors that were improved, a lot of like the actual mechanics of the game. I think the collision with the damage was also changed, because the demo itself, I mean, it didn't really play all that well. So we were kind of, I was really on that. And, you know, basically, if you signed up for a PSN account over in Japan, you could get it over here in the U.S. So a lot of the Bleach fans went ahead and checked it out. And, you know, in the beginning, there were, you know, people were a little skeptical, but, you know, for the most part now, with a lot of the reviews we've been getting in, it seems like a lot of the issues really aren't prevalent anymore. So I guess they really kind of fixed it. That's good.
Yeah. You know? Now, in one issue Midas addresses, he says at least two websites said they beat the game in about 3 hours. Jeez, I want to know what they were. What they were on when they did that, because it took me a bit longer. Did NISA ever discuss adding more content to the game?
Yeah, the thing is, one with the development over there, it's kind of a sticky situation, just because it's made over in Japan, and mm-hmm. you know, and it has the licensing with not only with Shueisha but with Sony, and then also the like a few of the small sub developers.
Sure.
It's tough because some of the things that they may want to put in there aren't able to be released, or haven't been put into the manga here in the U.S. or mm-hmm. haven't actually released in the U.S. So one of the main reasons, if I take a side tangent, is that when we were trying to put the game out here, and we were trying to kind of bump up the press for it, we weren't really allowed to show a lot of the characters, because up until the actual launch, they hadn't been shown, or, you know, they may be popping in and out of the upcoming movie for Bleach. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is kind of the part of the reason why we aren't gonna, or I don't, pretty much at this point, we don't have too many plans for putting stuff out on PSN for downloads or add-ons, just for that reason. It's because mm-hmm. it's kind of, I mean, we really were lucky to be able to get the game, but, you know, there's about six different big players tied into the actual, you know, what gets done with the game.
The licensing.
Because, yeah, because it's Viz Media over here, and then it's Sony over here, and then there's us, and then over in Japan there's multiple companies too. So to get everybody on board and be able to get the decision made, it's really tough.
Yeah, it's a minor miracle that just made it out here. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, it was, we were really lucky to do it because everybody knew, you know, when they were going and putting bids in to localize the game, what was entailed, you know, because it was just it was going to be a lot of communication back and forth, and you know, it took a while, but you know, we got it done.
Yeah,
so that's the most important part.
Awesome. Now I just wanted to say that maybe you could beat the campaign, but some of those soul missions, that's gonna,
yeah,
you're gonna have some time with those. So
yeah, I mean, I think they did the grid. I mean, if that character leveling grid wasn't there, then I myself would have been, you know, I'd be like, okay, you know, that's where I would have called the kind of draw the line as a gamer myself.
Sure.
But I mean, the grid itself kind of gets you to go back and, you know, granted it's a little bit of grinding, but at the same time it makes you play the other characters, and then there are some pretty cool things tied into those mission modes. I want to allude to things, unofficially allude to, you know, things that haven't been released yet in, like, the U.S. Bleach universe. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's definitely some, you know, it's worth it. I mean, and if you do play all the characters to the max level, there's some serious time that you'd have to invest in the game. So,
oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah. Okay. So one of the things I also want to move on to is Promise Unforgotten here. Get right into it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, so recently I was in this discussion, really geeky discussion. There were a number of people that were kind of in this violent divide between the virtues of straight role-playing games and SRPGs. Now, they came to the conclusion that the SRPG was kind of tailor-made for people who think in numbers and statistics. The people that would probably be like baseball savants if baseball was, you know, interesting. So is there a type, and you guys probably have more insight into your audience, is there a type of person who likes Disgaea? And what is, you know, what is this person? Give me
Steven,
a profile of the average Disgaea fan.
Steven, go ahead.
I would probably have to say that the average Disgaea player is probably someone who just is really into, like, power leveling their characters. And, like, the grind is pretty much the main attraction for them.
Yeah.
And just trying to unlock everything and using every sort of little device in the game to power your character up. Because there's, like, so many different ways to do it. Whether it's like just power leveling or the abilities or unlocking all of like the master skills and all that. So there's just definitely so many ways that you can power your level your character up without actually having to just grind all the way up to like 9999 and then reincarnate to level 1 and do it all over again.
Right.
So I think that's definitely like the main draw for the main Disgaea audience.
Okay. Fair enough. Now, one of the things when I first heard about D4 was kind of focused on this tale of a vampire and werewolf-like guy. I was worried that the Netherworld was going to be influenced by Twilight. So can you guys kind of quell my fears? Is there any glitter?
There is no glitter.
Oh, thank God.
It's possible. I'm not saying it's... I can't exactly remember for sure, but there may not even be a Twilight reference in the game at all.
Oh, yes. Okay, thank you.
Because that was like kind of a point where like we were like, well, should we put some in? Should we not? And like I don't think any of them got into the game at all. So I'm pretty sure it's Twilight clear. If not, there may be like only one or two references.
You should put that in the back of the box, Twilight clear. And the other thing is it doesn't age too well. Like every once in a while I'll play an older game and there'll be some obscure Clinton reference.
Yeah,
you know? And because I think Twilight in about 10 years is probably going to disappear, hopefully.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. sorry, fans. Now, my other concern for D4 was the backdrop is a little bit more political. There's a certain game recently where you could be this either or, this compassionate liberal or really this douchebag kind of leader. And there wasn't really much in the middle of this continuum. So Promise Unforgotten, I know it kind of focuses more on politics, but does it, you know, move towards the boundaries, or is there a lot of that room in the middle there?
Well, it's mostly just like a parody of like corrupt governments and stuff like that. Like we actually call the government the corruptment.
Okay.
In there. So there's not really, it doesn't really deal with like any like conservative or liberal issues at all.
Okay.
It's mostly just making fun of how, like, because it's in the Netherworld, the government has to be corrupt.
Right.
And then, pretty much like the whole election thing is like whoever's more powerful wins.
Right. Are there smear campaigns when somebody's honest?
Well, there's. There's not actually much in the whole, it's just like politically themed, but there's not really any actual like elections or anything like that.
Okay. I was just meant like some of the dialogue or something, you know the whole topsy-turvy kind of
right.
Be fun.
Well, it's fun because actually when you do create your characters now, like for the generic ones, they will have like a little scene where like it's like, oh, here's the new senator, and like they'll introduce themselves. And a lot of times, like they have one where like the witch paints over like one of the campaign posters for like the mage guy, and then like she pretty much like is deriding him like on his poster. So there's a little couple jokes like that hidden in the game.
Okay.
But yeah. Overall, it, as you're going through the story, there's not really much actual political stuff. It's just mainly just the theme of it, but it doesn't really go like kind of like in Disgaea 3 the theme was like a high school for demons school. But there's not actually much class going on.
Okay. I just want to make sure it wasn't Fable 3 because
No.
that disappointed me so much. It's like you could either be, you know, a great person or just this evil, you know, scumbag there, and I wasn't a fan. Now some changes that were recently announced to Disgaea 4, custom map making component here in the Western territories, worried some people. Prinny King, he wanted to know why players were made to use pre-made landforms and not stacked duplicate objects. I guess, and this isn't his words, these are my own, was it really that easy to make penis-shaped levels?
Yeah, pretty, because in the original, the original way, it's pretty much, they had all these different blocks, like even down to like individual squares.
Okay.
So you can pretty much with the grid make whatever picture or whatever you want to make.
So the actual landform.
Yeah. So the actual, because we did is we kind of like restricted which landforms you can use.
Okay.
Just so like you don't have the control of each individual square.
Okay.
But there are several ones. They're just big enough so that like you can't write out stuff like your land. But there's a lot of customizability with how you place them, how you rotate them, how you like raise or lower their elevation and stuff like that. So you can still make your own unique maps. It's just you can't really like spell out everything.
Okay, cool. Now, were these changes requested by Sony? Because I think the other day I did a race around this Mod Nation racer track, and I swear it was a stick shift with two cogs at the base.
Yeah, I think it's because that it requires monitoring,
okay.
And it requires just like I'm pretty sure from what I remember when we were talking with the producer, it's because if you don't have somebody there to actually physically check every single submission, things can just get put out there, and then the gates of scatology would just be totally.
Open
without any sort of filter. And, you know, knowing the Disgaea, know, some of the
fan base.
Just not knowing the Disgaea mythos with
the horse wiener and such.
It would just be, it'd be interesting. So
now speaking of voices, which was an interesting one, you guys added some additional English voice work to the game. Now where does this fit in?
This pretty much fills in with some of the bonus scenes towards the end, like with the unlockable characters and such. Specifically, it's the Prinny Curtis, Pringer X, and the Zeta fights. Those were originally not voiced in Japanese, but we went ahead and voiced them for English.
Okay. All right. Now, are those DLC characters or on the disc?
They're on the disc and they're part of the main game, so you don't have to go and download any codes or anything like that.
Okay.
It's just part of the epilogue stuff where you usually will unlock more characters, like all the hidden cameo characters.
Yeah,
it's kind of like one of those, but it's slightly different.
Okay. Now, one of the things I noticed for the trailer personally was the tower attack, where an enemy was kind of being handed to each character as they made their way up, and an attack was thrown along the way. And there also seems to be some kind of movement where the whole tower just bent into this arc. Can you tell me a little bit more about this?
Yeah. Now, some of the moves that you can, some of the skills you can unlock with the abilities, are tower attack moves.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like special towers attacks, pretty much like the normal weapon ones, but you can only do them while you're in the tower. Mm-hmm. Some of them are, like one of them is the ability to like walk the tower.
Mm-hmm.
So they do that whole flip thing that they show in the trailer.
Yeah.
And there's also like a grab, so you can use the tower to like kind of reach over land in case it's like blocked off by like the abyss or something. Like you can't actually mm-hmm. reach that land, you can okay. use the tower to reach over and like grab the treasure chest or like level spheres or whatever it is you're trying to grab.
Oh, okay, cool. Now one of the things is accompanying Disgaea in the fall will be another Atelier game. So Ryan, can you tell me a little bit more about this one?
Absolutely.
Do I have to give you my soul to hear about it?
Of course, that's you have to pay the toll first. Okay. But
pretty empty. Just
no, we have if you guys prefer me, I can go back to normal voice, but this was just something I had to do.
It might scare our hardcore constituency.
So don't worry, I'm Roman Catholic. But Atelier Atoll 3 is going to be out also next month, at the end of the month, and for the fans who did play the original, which was Atelier Verona, came out just about a year ago. It's an alchemy RPG made by Gust over from Japan, and it's a lot of improvements been made from last year. Because the last one was a little bit more deadline based, where every 3 months you had to hand in some items or such, or otherwise you couldn't continue in the game. So mm-hmm. the flow of the game made it a little bit more like actual work, where you have to go in and hand something in to be able to go out and do something again. So they actually changed it around this time around for the game. And this one's a little bit focused more on adventuring, so it got rid of that real hardline every 3 months hand stuff in style gameplay and made it more exploring an RPG, and then kept all the good kind of going out and making things through alchemy in the game too. So yeah, it's looking pretty awesome.
Okay. Thank you, Jimmy Hoffa. I didn't know you were an Atelier fan, but nice to know what you've been doing in your absence. So tell me about Claydun 2, last thing, because the original won over a certain tech gaming personality who traditionally was indifferent towards NIS's output, and he liked that one, and so I, really excited for the sequel. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah, this one is, again, it's going to be PSN only, so mm-hmm. The last one was PSN, and it basically revolves around, again, the same story kind of over in Arcanus Cella, I believe is what it's called. And basically, we went ahead and a lot of improvements were made over from the last. Again, we have the same kind of leveling system where you have the magic circles. And basically, for people who don't know too much about Clannoon, it's the main character himself. You are actually... to level your main character, you want to actually level everybody else in your party first and make mm-hmm. them stronger, as their kind of strength and abilities and stats that you do in this magic circle affect how strong your main character becomes. So it's kind of a cool leveling system. So what you do is you put all these people in your magical sphere and go into a dungeon, and then it's kind of 8-bit kind of classic dungeon style, running around grinding and killing stuff. So I mean, it's looking pretty awesome. Last time we only had one thing called a Ranjun, which would be like a randomly generated mm-hmm. dungeon. And this time around, we actually have three different ones. There's Trijuns, Neojuns, and then what was the last one? I know there's a different type of Ranjuns too. So basically, yeah, there's a lot more gameplay, a lot more ways to get the better items, because the game kind of revolves around a random drop premise where mm-hmm. you could get, depending on what level or what kind of dungeon you're in, you can actually get better upgraded weapons, and it's completely random, so it's pretty cool that way.
You guys have a date on this one?
For right now, we're still in the finalizing stages, but the last time I heard, this would be Tech Gaming exclusive, we have the end of the month is slated for right now, but yeah, don't tell.
Wait, the end of this month?
That's what I have, yeah, for right now. Yes. But I mean, yeah.
Don't break my heart. You already promised me.
It's soon, but for right now, yeah, it's the end of the month. So, yeah, again, that'll be the PSN only, and yeah, I mean, everyone seemed. I really liked it myself. It's definitely like really kind of that old classic feel. Like I don't know, kind of reminded me of Gauntlet the first time I saw it.
Mm-hmm. But it kicked my ass a lot more. I mean, it had a certain like, I understood it. I got the magic circle and everything, but then I don't know, there was a certain point where it just got hard.
And
it wasn't a frustrating hard. It was like, I can conquer this, which really kind of made it fun, and you know, grind it up a little, and you know, it wasn't insurmountable, but no, it was definitely fun to be had, and
yeah.
Encourage people to check it out. Okay, so I heard you guys brought in an actual Prinny into the studio, so maybe you can, you know, let him take to the mic and tell us more about release dates.
That's right, dude. So let's go down to the line here. We're kind of doing, like we said, which one was it, dude? So let's see, at the end of the month, hopefully. And then is it just me and my voice like this, or am I actually sounding like pretty high pitched?
Like a Smurf Prinny, but you're laughing. Okay. I don't think Prinny's laugh.
Oh, sorry. I need to be more serious here.
There you go.
Let's see, next we have, which one was it, dude? Sky of 4 on September 6th, and then, let's see, next Coach Ray on September 27th, and I think that's it, dude.
Okay, thank you, Prinny.
You're welcome. I had to put him back in his cage there.
We're back now. Sage, you still excited?
Yeah, I'm so excited. How about that announcement, huh?
Exclusive.
I can't wait for that special announcement.
Yes, you guys. Okay. So, should we move on to trivia?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So, yes, Sage. What are we going to say?
No, I was just going to say I have a feeling I'm going to lose really hard tonight. Okay.
So in honor of Takashi Miyagi's passing, I thought we'd offer a tribute to the Grandia creator's legacy. Does that sound cool?
Yeah. Yes.
Sounds good, but I know I'm going to die in this.
All right. Well, you will die by the third question. Okay, so Miyagi founded Game Arts with his brother Yoichi in 1985. What was the studio's first game? Is it A, Silphied, B, Dexter, C, Solitaire Royale, or D, Alicia Dragoon?
I'm going to go with A.
Silphied? Okay. Are you there?
E.
You're going to go Dexter?
E.
Wait, E? There was no E.
Yep.
E as an elephant?
No, I said B. B as in boy. B as in boy.
You said E as an echo. That is incorrect. The correct
no.
answer. No, it was B. Yeah, you're right. Dexter.
Oh.
Good job. How's your lifeline there, Blue?
Well, if by lifeline you mean Google, I'm not using it. Even though I have a Firefox window open and my phone sitting next to me, I'm being very good because I don't want to cheat.
Good, good for you. Miyagi's first job was with a prominent Japanese publisher, famous for Clock Tower and Gunnak. Name that corporation. A. Buka Entertainment. B. ASCII Entertainment. C. Konami. D. Capcom. Are we calling him Crapcom these days?
That works for me. I'll call him that.
Oh. Answers. You have them.
D.
What were the series?
Clock Tower and Gunnak.
I'm gonna go with Capcom. Crapcom.
Yep.
What the correct answer was ASCII Entertainment. ASCII, you shall receive ye.
What letter was ASCII?
B. Bravo.
Oh, okay.
In Grandia, Sue has a pet named Puffy. That's right, Blue. Puffy. Invitation time.
I'm Puffy. I don't give a fuck.
So where did Sue receive it? A, from her mother. B, she found Puffy. C, from Lily. Or D, from Justin's father.
I'm going to go with...
Say them again.
From her mother. She found Puffy. From Lily. Or from Justin's father.
What was the other option? That was three.
Mother. She found Puffy. From Lily. From Justin's father.
Oh, okay.
There's four.
Her mom. Your mama.
Okay.
Blue. Your mama.
I'm going to say that she found them, but I'm probably going to be kicking myself because I think I should say Justin's father.
In that... Yeah, you're right. You should be saying that. Correct answer, D, from Justin's father, the fourth
one.
Okay, guys. One last chance to redeem yourself with Grandia. What do Justin, Sue, and Gantz call Gantz's wooden sword? Is it A, the spirit sword? B, the Gaia blade? C, spirit blade? Or D, spirit cutlass?
Spirit Cutlass sounds like a pretty badass name.
Isn't that something someone would... Oh, okay. Isn't that something someone would wield in Soul Calibur?
I think it's either A or C. I don't know if they said blade or sword.
Okay, so pick one. A or C.
Can you give me a hint?
It's not D.
Shit. We'll say C.
Correct answer, A, spirit sword.
Dang it! I knew it!
What mecha
Sage's
game...
Sage's rage meter filled by 30.
Yes. What mecha
game... I knew it. I hate that.
Let's continue. What mecha game did Miyagi create? A, Armored Core. B, Heavy Unit. That's an interesting name. C, Super Robot Wars Alpha 2. Or D, Gun Griffin.
Ooh, I'm going to go with Gun Griffin.
Sage?
Sure.
Sure what?
We'll go with Blue's answer.
Correct answer, Gun Griffin.
Yeah, woo! Baby!
Yay!
You saved yourself. Last question. What years did the original Silp Feed make its appearance on the MS-DOS platform? Or, I'm sorry, what year? A, 1982, B, 1986, C, 1990, or D, 1992?
B.
I'm going to go with 1990.
Correct answer, 1986, B. And our winner this week would be Samurage.
Samurage.
Crisis Diverted. Give your own theme song. That's we're going to have to put some bumpers in just for that. So we got some questions for this week.
Hey, I before you get too far,
yes.
I brought a trivia question of
my own.
Oh,
that's right. That's right. Okay, let me hear it. I'm on the receiving end tonight.
Weird.
Ouch, and it hurts.
That's
ow. Oh my god, you guys.
Sorry.
For the record, I have not brought up poop or penises or sex once entire time, but you guys have brought it up like...
So you're slacking.
Is
that what you're saying?
Jesus, I guess. I suppose.
You are winning, you are losing. Okay, continue, Blue.
Depends.
Okay, this question is about Suda 51.
Okay.
At the beginning of his career in gaming, Goichi Suda, aka Suda 51, was a scenario writer for Human Entertainment, a company perhaps best known for its Clock Tower and Fire Pro Wrestling games. One game that Suda was a part of was Super Fire Pro Wrestling Special for the Super Famicom, or the Super Nintendo, if you will. The game featured a shocking ending in which, spoilers,
I know.
The main character dies in a manner controversial for games of that era. How does the main character die? Does he, A, he dies in the ring after his opponent intentionally breaks his neck. B, he commits suicide after he is rejected by his love interest and his trainer is killed right in front of him.
C, that sounds good. Yeah.
He contracts AIDS while wrestling in a bloody barbed wire match and dies.
What the fuck?
Hate when that happens.
This is awful. This is an awful downer question. Or D.
It's like Saw.
Or D. He gets stabbed in the heart on his way back to the locker room by a crazed fan of the wrestler that he had just beaten to win the championship.
They all sound good. I'm going to go with suicide.
Yep, suicide.
And I think you contradicted me with Clock Tower, because I just said Clock Tower came from ASCII. So I don't know what happened there. But yeah, suicide for the win.
Suicide.
And you two would be correct. It was suicide.
Those are some good answers, though.
Yeah, I
almost went with D, just from the delivery of it.
Why? Thank you. I gotta tell you, it's like I almost felt like it would be tasteless to put the AIDS thing in, but I've watched Japanese pro wrestling. I see a lot of barbed wire matches, and I mean that's just it isn't hygienic. I mean. I'm sure that's happened at
well,
least.
Well, you no, because there's rigorous STD testing you go through when you're a fighter. Fighters are actually really serious about having protected sex and needle usage and stuff because
you didn't talk about sex during this episode.
Well, I'm bringing it up because you complained. I threw that in there just for you.
Redemption.
But no, they're actually very, because if you contract, I mean, I don't know about in other countries, but I think this is a globally federated thing. If you contract a blood transferable disease, you are not allowed to fight in the ring anymore.
I know there were rumors circulating that somebody from TNA, I think it was Desmond Wolfe, had to retire due to hepatitis, I think. I'm not sure if that was 100% confirmed, but I think that was a rumor.
I don't know if that is true, but that would be a reason to have to retire, because they won't let you fight if you don't have a clean blood test.
Okay, awesome. Any more questions, Luke?
No, that's it.
Oh.
I have a thought, though, Deagle. What if one week we invited, what if we have a contest and the winners of that contest, like a question on the website or something, and the winners get to do a trivia that we each come up with two questions.
Like live?
The winners come on. And the winners come on live. And they get to try out our trivia challenge, and then whoever wins gets a guest speaker spot for 10 minutes on one of the shows or something.
That's a little worrisome, but yeah, let's put it to the test. Listeners, readers, what do you think? Post it on the site. Let's see if you're interested in doing something like that, coming on the show. Talking to your idols, Sage and Blue, but not me. We got questions, guys.
Questions!
We got a question from answers. Twitter superstar Lick Chan.
Did you notice the audio quality kind of dipped a bit just a minute ago?
No, the podcast quality dipped when when I came on. But no, I didn't notice.
I've noticed, but I don't know if it matters or not. Listeners, if the sound quality sucks all of a sudden, we're sorry. We don't know why.
Okay. So mailbag. Twitter superstar Lick Chan asks, PSN saves and trophy autosync is PlayStation Plus only. What say you? Guys?
I say that's bullshit.
Okay, there's your answer. Bullshit. I recently subscribed to PlayStation Plus after my free subscription ran out, and I thought that the discount on games would be worthwhile. But what really didn't sell me was the patching that could be done in the middle of the night. Usually I would just kind of leave my PlayStation on before I'd go to bed and then have it turn off within 2 hours. That wasn't a big selling point. But as for these two features, being able to save even protective saves on the cloud, I don't really anticipate using this feature. I mean, for the person who, say, plays at the office and then plays at home, this might be useful. But, you know, if your office is a room in your own house, not so much. As for the trophy autosync, to me that seems like something that Sony can improve on. I know with Xbox Live the trophies are pretty instantaneous, and I just don't see why the PS3 takes from, you know, 3 to 5 minutes to upload data for 10 trophies. I mean, it just takes a long time. I don't know what it's doing there.
I agree.
You know, some kind of authentication, but it seems like it's just pushing gigabytes of data, you know? What is
right.
it?
Mostly my problem with them is the timing.
It gets stuck at like 11%. It's just taking a dump.
Yeah.
Okay.
God, always really... with the poop.
Mm-hmm. Bring the poop.
It seems like Microsoft really... I mean, I think Microsoft does that with... or has cloud saving now too, don't they? Didn't that just go live a couple of weeks ago?
If it did, I wouldn't know because I really don't have a use for Save on the Cloud. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm old school thinking about the Sony, you know, type of thing when the PSN was down. I'd rather have my saves on my hard drive. Now with the consoles, what do they have, you know, 250 gigabytes, 300, you know, gigabyte hard drives. Saving something that's smaller than a gig or even, you know, it's no big deal. I mean, you can have hundreds of saves on there. I thought
your game saved onto the live network already anyway.
No. If what you're thinking of is the Call of Duty 2, it would look at your achievements, and if you beat a certain level, it would, you know, give you an achievement. So if you played it on another console and you logged in, it would say, okay, you can access this second or third level. But not necessarily a save per se. It would look at achievements tied to progress on some games.
Okay.
Of course, not all.
Because the games I had played, the progress, you know, sort of seemed like it was in the same point, even if I just loaded up on someone else's box. But maybe it was that kind of thing.
Were you were using your own profile?
Yes, and the sound quality changed again. Deagle, I think it's you.
I noticed the change as well.
For the better,
like
for the worse.
I just improved about 10 seconds ago.
Well, okay. Now it's better. No, now it's better.
Okay.
But you know, I mean, with cloud saves, it's like I can see the point of them, but I'm not sure if I'd pay extra to have them. I mean, there's some saves
that,
you know, I mean, if you're like 70 or 80 hours into an RPG, I mean, it's definitely not a bad idea to have a backup save in case, you know, something goes wrong or the system red rings or hard drive failure or something like that. I mean, I've lost game saves before. I had one original PlayStation memory card, and it was, of course, a third party, I might add. I had one PlayStation memory card that it glitched out big time to the point where if the card was in the system, none of the controllers would work. And I ended up having to replay the entire, having to unlock everybody again in SmackDown 2, I believe it was. But it was the weirdest thing. It's like if that memory card was plugged in, it would just kill all the controllers.
Would you give them a shout out? Who was it? Mad Cats?
I can't remember whether it was Mad Cats or Interactive.
You know, that could be awesome. You take it to a friend's house and just plug it into the second port, and they may not notice it, and they just think their system took a dump on them.
And then they sell the system to you. They're like, hey, my PS isn't really working. You want it? And you're like, yes, I'll buy it off you for $10.
I was just thinking like a one-day April Fool's thing, but you're thinking of nefarious things. Jeez.
That's not nefarious. It's all in good fun.
How to score a system
for PlayStation
for $10.
$10. I mean, Goodwill has a ton of those things.
Really? Not the ones here.
Yeah. No, not here. I mean, they're wiped clean. Yeah.
I saw like an original PlayStation with like a third-party controller, no other hookups or anything, and a, you know, the PS1 ONE, the second generation or second version of it, and not
Where
one of
live?
Them had it, huh?
Where do you live?
I'm in Tennessee, Nashville.
Oh,
yeah. And, but yeah, it's like I saw, you know, two PlayStations with, you know, none of the cable, you know, the cable hookups or anything. One had a controller, and my Goodwill had priced them at like $4.
Wow.
But they might not work. Part of the thing is you don't know if they work, and if you get them home and they don't work, Goodwill's policy is that you can't return them.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound like Goodwill to me.
Sounds like bad intentions.
It's bad karma. Okay, so next question comes from Grift, 865. You guys seem to write well, and he didn't put good, and really put some effort in your articles. What makes a good preview, review, news item? Who does it well or best in our industry? I like the way he says R. Inclusive. That's what Grift 865 is. Guys, who do you think does it well besides me?
Nobody. No.
Sing the James Bond song.
What was that magazine? What was that magazine that you had us read?
Edge. Edge does it.
Is that the
best. Did you end up?
No, they.
Yeah. Did you end up reading that?
I did read. Yeah.
Awesome.
They have good writers. They have good articles. Yeah. It's sort of a pricey magazine, but it's definitely substantial. I mean, it's worth it.
And the funny thing was, I also read that issue of Edge on the way home, and it wasn't as good as it had been previous. I can't exactly put my finger. There were a lot of, you know, like kind of poppy references and a lot of cute writing instead of just, you know, really talking about the game in that particular issue, but still heads above some of the stuff that we have in this country. So yeah, I'm with you. Edge is kind of the bar that everything else is measured against.
I don't think I've ever
read. They're on the cutting edge.
I'm sorry? They are the cutting edge.
They're on the cutting edge.
Wah, wah, wah.
You know, I don't think I think the only gaming magazines I've bought in the last several years, actually, I mean, I think there was like a free some sort of a deal to get a free EGM subscription if you did like some sort of a survey or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I did that. Got about a year's worth of it, or just about a year's worth, and I think I did a second survey and got another year, and that's around the time EGM went under.
Right.
And since then, I think the only gaming magazine that I've read was like the first issue of that At Gamer magazine that Best Buy has. And I mean, that was okay. I read it on a car trip once, but I think that was.
It's nice looking. I looked at that today, and it's more style over substance. There's not much to it. Reviews are two paragraphs tops, but it looks good. Layout's clean and everything.
It looks like it's like the perfect magazine for like casual gamer who's maybe thinking about getting into gaming a little more, wants to check out maybe something, you know, what games are coming out.
Yeah.
That I want to look forward to. It's like an entry-level magazine.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's a good analysis. The one thing about a preview, and this kind of drives me crazy on previews, is especially with magazines, they will write a four-paragraph description of a one-minute trailer. And they'll talk about everything. Uh-huh. And it's just like, well, I can watch the trailer online and kind of make up my own mind of, you know, the plot and you know, figure out what's going on. And I'd much rather in a preview, you tell me how the game works, feels, you know, where it's at in its development cycle. You know, what kind of works, what doesn't work. And I'd like previews like that and ones that just are kind of fluff and take me through the story that I'm going to see in the trailer anyway. Don't really care for.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not gameplay, there's no point in writing a preview.
Right.
I mean, it's pointless. It just wastes everybody's time.
Yeah. I mean, unless it's interesting, maybe something they haven't shown yet. News items are interesting. I was thinking of one in particular where I think a very popular notion is kind of the top 10. Like, they'll put the top 10, you know, hottest fighter girls, and, you know, I'll have Cammy in there somewhere. And those top 10 lists only work if there's a good amount of text. If you just throw in a picture and in like a single sentence, you know, and I think I'm pointing the finger at like Yu-Gi-Oh, it's not very interesting. But if you do it and you really give some, you know, trivia, some you know, backstory, some information that, you know, people may not know, then that can work. Because I'm not against, you know, top right. 10 lists. I think those are interesting and a way of kind of bringing together, you know, information that doesn't naturally go together. You know, those can work. But, you know, give me some text. Don't just throw up pictures. Make me click through them.
IGN's terrible.
I think the other thing that...
IGN does that?
Yeah, they are.
I mean, they'll do like maybe two paragraphs, you know, when they're doing like a top 25 games that begin with the letter F or something like that. You know, something stupid like that.
Fire Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, number one. Better be. But
I think the other thing that makes it...
But the one thing I was going to say about IGN, if they do that, maybe it's because they have 25 games, and this is just me personally, maybe I'd rather see 10 games than an analysis of 25 or even 50 games. Like, I'd rather see top five and read a little bit more substance, and that's just more subjective.
I mean, when you get over like 10 games and you're like doing like a best DS games of all time or something like that, it's like if you go over 10,
right,
it's like you have to really be scrutinizing just little insignificant things to get like, okay, Castlevania Dawn of Sorrow should be number 27 on the list because its sequel had slightly higher resolution sprites or something like that, you know?
Wait, why would it be 27 on the top 10? You lost me.
It was just throwing out an example.
Okay. That went over my head.
I think what makes those top 10 or top whatever lists successful, and also what makes a preview successful, is when they make note of uniquenesses to the games rather than just, because there's so many reviews, previews, lists that I read where if you break it down, basically every single one is like, so it looks pretty and it's cool and it's like good. And like, if you cut out all of their adjectives and everything, that's basically what they're saying. And I don't want to hear that it looks pretty and it's cool. I want to hear, you know, the gameplay is really dynamic, or I want to hear that it follows a different structure than most games of the genre, or I want to, and if it doesn't do any of those things, then call it what it is and just say that it's, you know, pretty same game to everything else that exists right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. Last question, Baron Karza. What is your favorite game to play with a wife, girlfriend, perhaps a sig other who's not into gaming? Is that a significant other?
I'm going to assume.
So. Okay. Like a sig fig.
Well, when I'm hanging out with my wife and my girlfriend,
Catherine and Catherine.
Dang it, you nailed me. No. So specifically a significant other that isn't into gaming?
Yeah, I think that's what the Baron's getting at.
Well, I don't have significant others that don't like gaming, so I don't know what I would play with them. I guess I wouldn't play anything.
Yahtzee.
Yahtzee, yeah. No.
Monopoly. Clue.
For me, I think definitely music games and ones that aren't necessarily really hardcore, like the... Guitar Hero Rock Band. I'm thinking more of like the Lips and the SingStar, which anyone, you know, who can sing and stay on key can pick up that and play. So that's really fun.
One of the Dance Dance games, maybe, like the easier one levels on them, or Wii bowling and shit is good for that if they're not really into gaming but they're with like cute little.
Is that a sequel? Wii bowling and shit.
Nintendo's really lazy now.
No, I mean, those
kind of things. Something. Wait until you see this.
Wii bowling, what kind of
Wiimote gestures do you need to excel in that game?
You need to be able to squat.
You hold the Wii remote at your hip and go up, down, up, down, up, down.
Yep.
And then wipe with the Wiimote.
And then wipe
with your friend's remote. Not your own.
And then you bowl with that.
Mm-hmm. For me, I mean, it's like I really don't have a significant other. I believe the phrase is bachelor, single and looking. Ladies, please call me. I'm begging you. No, that wasn't it.
Oh, no.
That's the wrong message. Well, no, okay, but if you had someone come over who didn't really play video games, who was your friend?
I'd probably.
Hide the sausage.
Spin the bottle.
That's disgusting. Jeez.
I'd probably whip out something that's pretty simple. I didn't think about what I said until after I'd already said it.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Freud would have a field day with this episode. This is the Freudian podcast. That's what this one is.
I'm loving it.
I thought this was the Mache Twat podcast.
It is.
Oh Jesus.
If iTunes will accept it.
AKA Freud on a field day.
But as for, you know, casual games, you know, I mean, one game that I might bring out is that just a couple of days ago, would you guys get your heads out of the gutter for just a second?
I'm laughing because how you sanitized it instead of whipping it out. Now it's just bringing it out. Sorry. Maturity. Here I come.
I don't even remember what we're talking about at this point. Are we still talking about Hide the Sausage, right?
One game that I would put into...
Oh, God.
I don't know if there's any way I could talk about this without making some sort of like a sexual reference that isn't intentional.
Okay, you know what? Here's the answer to the question. The answer to the question is, if we had a significant other, any of us, who didn't want to play video games, we'd have sex with them instead. Okay, that's the answer. That's what we're getting.
I'm glad he yanked that answer out.
We'd play that new role-playing game, Trojan Man.
Yeah. So video games are
Trojan
for sale.
Trojan Man!
Yes, the single-player games and the multiplayer games. Okay.
There was one game that I found... One thing I found over at Sears a couple of days ago was Lego Rock Band for the Xbox 360. They were clearing it out for $4.
Wow.
And
wonder why.
No, actually, it's pretty decent. I mean, for $4, yeah, it's definitely worth it just for the song selection alone, because it does come with an export code. And you know, I mean, the soundtrack's got like a couple of songs from Queen, Fire by the Jimi Hendrix Experience, you know, stuff like that. I mean, the soundtrack is decent, especially for $4. I mean, there's just what the Queen and Hendrix songs is worth $4 to me. But one thing that they added for Lego Rock Band, because they knew that the target audience was much younger because of the Legos, they have super easy mode.
Mm-hmm.
And with super easy mode, all you have to do is strum on time. You don't have to worry about the fingering, if I'm correct.
Oh, no.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no. Oh, sorry, guys.
Yes, strum it up and down and figure it real good.
Oh, God.
Grab that squire and let it squeal.
Yes. So as
that, now, which port did you plug it into? The front or the back?
You forgot. Your
Don't answer. Don't answer. No, it's a trick.
I think there's one more port in there, and isn't there like one at the top?
Oh yeah, there's that one. Okay.
And the sad thing is, you know, if you really think about it, with the original Xbox 360, it's like there are two USB ports in the front, and like if the consoles land flat, there is one on the bottom, one at the top, and one in the back.
I really hope that that is not why the layout was designed that way. I really do, because if it is, that means some nerd at Microsoft who's never gotten laid was like, hey, I have all this pent-up sexual energy. What do I do with it? I'm going to design the 360 with a bunch of holes.
It's too bad.
Yeah, that my inputs. I need inputs. Damn it.
It's too bad my Kinect is just plugging up my back port right now.
Oh, my God.
That Kinect really is a pain in the ass.
Okay. So since this is not the Grandma Sex Talk channel, are there any other questions, Deagle?
That's it. Okay. So anyway, maturity here. If you'd like to read more of our reviews, talk about ports, all
which
those.
Which I promise, do not have as much sex penis poop talk as our podcast does, in case you care about, you know, game reviews at all.
Yeah, so
wait a minute, you have a penis that poops?
That's disgusting.
No.
That is disgusting. So anyway, check out this.
Those words kind of blended together. I'm like, wait, what? Huh?
Yes. Now I will have nightmares. Thank you, Blue. www.tech-gaming.com is the address. Reviews, editorials, podcast, jokes. Not too many jokes, but other fun stuff. If you want to hear from us personally, you can follow me at tech_gaming. Sage is at Samurage. And Baloo is at Baloo Swim, all one word.
Be
follow
cool
our long
like
lost.
Be cool like Nero from Detoid and follow me.
you can also follow long lost people like at Sean Nola, who's at Sean 2Ns OLA, and long lost Adam Tidegear, aka Karnov Malecki, who is at Tidegear. You can also find him at Rockin' Android, no G. Gangster. So, subscribe to us iTunes. We got a new link, and make it happen.
Also, remember to get a Gravatar if you're on our site so that you, you know, actually look like something. And
like pixels.
There's a few people I've noticed now. There's like all three or four. I saw a
guy. And,
maybe I should lead the pack and get rid of my pixels, huh? Lead by.
And to the following people, to not Sean Nola and not Desert Eagle, I think that if you're going to keep those names, you should at least come up with a really clever, funny Gravatar that depicts that you are either not Sean Nola or not Robert Allen Deagle. I'm talking clever, not just a picture of you. So my challenge to you, since you have decided to keep those names on our posts post and comment under those names, is that you come up with a clever Gravatar.
Let me give a shout out to Jesse L, who's got a Gravatar. Fine looking young man there.
Yes.
Yes.
Very fine.
Black and white, though. That's cool.
That's tasteful. That's tasteful.
It's stylish.
Okay, guys. see you next week. Keep on strumming.
Try to keep it in your pants, guys. See you later.
Strum, 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 strum.
Slipped out.
Well, Blue already failed.
Not during the podcast. Oh my gosh.
You fail already. I'm going to rename you Fat Master McQueen.
I think that's going up. Fat Master.